I'm Richard Bennett, and this is the High Tech Forum Podcast, your go-to place for thoughtful, well-informed networking and tech policy discussion. Today, we're speaking with Dino Flore, who's the chairman of the 3GPP Radio Access Network Standards Organization. As Dino will explain, 3GPP is the organization that develops the standards for mobile broadband networks, 3G, 4G, LTE, and now 5G. Welcome, Dino.
Hi. Thanks, Richard. And yes, so my name is Dino Flore, and I'm Senior Director at Qualcomm Technologies, Incorporated, and with a leadership role in the 3GPP standardization. And since 2005, I've contributed to the 3GPP standards and the specification of 3G and LTE systems, first as a Qualcomm delegate, but then from August 2009 to May 2013 as chairman of the Working Group 3, which is the working group in charge of the access network interfaces. And finally, from March 2013 as chairman of 3GPP RAN, which, as you said, is the technical specification group with overall responsibility for the radio interfaces and access networks for 3G, LTE, and soon the 5G. Maybe I can give some background on 3GPP if you're interested. So
I think it would probably be helpful to our audience. I think we're most generally familiar with 3G, 4G, and 5G, but completely in the dark about how these standards come about, what it is that motivates the industry to keep pushing the envelope the way they do. So why don't you explain the role of 3GPP in the world of networking standards and say how it compares to things like IEEE 802, the Wi-Fi Alliance, Internet Engineering Task Force, and organizations of that sort.
Yeah, so let's say 3GPP is a global partnership among seven telecommunication standards development organizations, so-called SDOs, and it's a global partnership because these SDOs are from around the world. There is ETSI from Europe, ATIS from US, ARIB and TTC from Japan, TTA from Korea, CCSA from China, TSDSI, the newcomer from India. And again, all these standard development organizations, SDOs, they got together to create this global partnership with the goal to produce system-wide technical specification for the cellular industry. That's the key thing. It's really targeted to the cellular industry. But the other important thing is that really we produce system-wide specification. This includes radio access, core transport network, and service capabilities, including work on codecs, security, quality of services, and that is also a key differentiator to 3GPP as on other bodies. Really, this ability to provide system-wide end-to-end technical specifications and to serve our industry. 3GPP is composed by three technical specification groups, RAN, the one I oversee, which is in charge of the radio, SA, which is in charge of the overall system and services, and CT for the core network and terminals.
So let me jump in here. Is SA is system architecture?
Yeah, exactly, and services, service requirements and system architecture. So each of the technical specification group has plenary and working group meetings. So the plenary meetings are the ones that make project management decisions, which means they decide what to specify and by when, or what to study by when, and resolve contentious technical issues escalated by the working groups. The working groups meetings, instead, they do progress the technical work in line with the objectives and timeline established by the plenary. So this is the difference between the way we operate within each technical specification group. And the one I oversee, as I was saying before, is the RAN TSG, Technical Specification Group, which is in charge of the radio technologies of 3GPP. Again, 3G, LTE, and soon the 5G. And it's really a global effort. So it's about, I got some, I dig and found some stats maybe you could be interested in. And it's about, we have about 400 companies from 39 countries. We spent 50,000 delegate days per year in terms of actual work and meeting time we do every year, and then 40,000 documents per year, 1,200 specifications per release we maintain, and then we have a new release approximately every 18 months at the time. And this really, and when I was saying before, it's a global organization, it's almost evenly distributed between the three regions of the world. The three regions in the sense of this region partitioning that exists in the telecommunication world between region 1, 2, and 3.
I think that it's probably fair to say that 3GPP differs from some other network standards organization, like, say, IEEE 802 and IETF, for example, in that you have a much broader scope.
Yes, as I was saying before, a key difference is we really have a broader scope, and we also deliver these system-wide specifications way above only the radio and the radio links, and really has been a key differentiator. The other key thing is we are really target and we serve the cellular industry primarily, and that is a key thing. And we have before was not that clear, but at this time we really are the go-to standards organization for the cellular industry.
Well, and I think one of the things that makes 3GPP unique in the overall world of standards, and this is a world that I've worked in for a long time, actually since the mid-80s, IETF in particular, produces an awful lot of standards, and informational standards, and then also actual operational standards that don't seem to really go anywhere. I mean, it's almost as if any time someone has a good idea, they write an RFC on it. And now there are over 6,000 RFCs, and probably the number of those that are actually implemented in live practice is pretty small compared to the overall output. But with 3GPP, I think it's pretty much the case that when you release a standard, people actually adopt it. So you have this...
Broadly, yes. I would say I don't know the statistics of other fora, so I cannot really compare. But broadly, I would say yes. Of course, there is some waste also in the 3GPP process. I cannot claim that everything we write gets deployed. And this waste, it's also part... It's I would say it's inherent to the fact that we work on things that will have to be deployed many years down the road. So we don't have a perfect crystal ball. So in some cases, we have written specification features that they never saw the light of the day. But again, that is part of the process. But largely, we do deliver quality specs and of things that get deployed by the industry, by the cellular industry, and largely by the time the market requires so. Of course, there are, again, some inefficiency in the process. Also, the process, it's not meant to be super efficient. It's meant to be, I would say, more inclusive so that we have this broad adoption and broad industry recognition. And we succeeded on that, and it could have been more efficient, but we decided to instead favor more inclusiveness and broad industry support. So there are some inefficiencies as well. I will not claim that we are a super efficient group, but again, I'm very satisfied, and I think the cellular industry has been very satisfied with 3GPP in delivering quality specifications to date at the time when features are needed.
Well, you have to deal with the fact that spectrum allocations are not uniform around the world. There are some countries that have different positions about how the spectrum should be utilized. There's FDD and TDD, different options about how to use spectrum in terms of upstream and downstream that vary from country to country. And for the most part, it's actually quite amazing that you can buy a mobile phone in the United States, and just with swapping out a SIM card, I can pretty much use my 4G iPhone almost anywhere in the world. I think a lot of the credit for that actually goes to the work that 3GPP does. So the primary work product of 3GPP is identified by the releases, as I understand it. So the line between 3G and 4G is somewhat unclear because there are variations of these standards that are actually defined by their releases. So some people will say 5G is LTE, and other people will say, no, it's really 3.9G. But in some sense, LTE is independent of the release.
Yeah, maybe a clarification there, it could help. In 3GPP, we explicitly and we decided to shy away from using the term 3G, 4G, actually. It's not in any official documents. We don't define what 4G is, 3G is, and in future also what 5G will be, because as you were already starting to mention, these are really marketing terms that the industry and companies, they use in a slight different ways. So different companies, they use it in a slight different ways. So in 3GPP, we really focus on the technology. And when we started LTE, we said, okay, now we are starting this new radio, and it will be LTE with certain requirements. Then the market called, and different companies called 4G different things. To my knowledge, they use 4G for three slightly different things. But that's the key thing is that 3GPP does not define what is 4G, what is 5G, and what was 3G at that time. So we leave that to our members to decide how to best market the features we produce. For sure, we produce, we have these platforms, the 3G platform, the UMTS platform, the LTE platform, and soon there will be a new platform for 5G, a new radio. But again, the exact definition of where the boundaries are for 4G and 5G, we leave that to our members. And that just to be clear.
Okay. So your official designations are the release numbers and the standards. So right now we're on what, release 13?
Yeah, we are in the middle of release 13, which is slated for completion by March 2016, next year. And that is what we are working right now. But of course, we are also cleaning up the release 12 spec, which has been frozen. So people have started to implement products based on that. But as people implement products, we start to have corrections, because we need to get the specs more stable. And we are doing these two things. But the new, on the new front, we are really working hard on release 13, which includes a variety of new things coming up, and you will see also in the presentation if you link it, and I could also briefly talk about that.
Oh, okay, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so in this again, in this new release of LTE, we are really working on two dimensions. So on one dimension, we are expanding the LTE platform to new services and connectivity paradigms. On the other axis, we are really improving its efficiency to meet the mobile broadband demand, which continues to grow and will continue to grow in the coming years. So it's very important that we also keep improving the efficiency of the LTE platform. So for this, so we have for these two axes, we are doing a number of features we're developing for release 13. So for the first axis, so for to meet the mobile broadband demand, there are different areas we're working on. One area, which I think it's of interest based on what we discussed before, is the whole story of the offload to unlicensed spectrum. So basically what we have realized that is that 3GPP operators, they are more and more using opportunistically unlicensed spectrum to offload the traffic and to meet this growing traffic demand. And we are working hard to give the 3GPP operators two options to do that. One is offload to unlicensed spectrum via Wi-Fi and through the LTE Wi-Fi interworking. And one is to offload with LTE over unlicensed. And I don't know if you want to talk more about that right now, or we can zoom in later, because I saw it later in the agenda. It's either way is fine with me.
Think we may as well just go right ahead. We'll talk through what the key elements are going to be, and we're on it right now. We're talking about release 13, right?
Yeah. So, and that's fine. Let's spend some time on it. So, as I said, this is a very important piece of work we are doing in release 13. And again, it's about how to allow 3GPP operators to opportunistically offload to unlicensed, and we are working on these two schemes. One is with by using the Wi-Fi itself and having this smooth interworking between the two technologies, and one is by using LTE. So for the first one.
Well, let me ask you something about the Wi-Fi method, offloading to Wi-Fi. Would that use the so-called hotspot 2.0?
So it uses a variety of things. In fact, on my presentation, there is a huge number of components to that, and the operators will decide exactly what to use. Not necessarily hotspot 2.0, but it could be a combination of that and other features. So in fact, for this LTE Wi-Fi interworking, we have been working on it since release 8, and we keep improving this interworking, adding features so they can become tighter and tighter and smoother, this steering of traffic between LTE and Wi-Fi. To the point that in release 12, we also started to do some interworking at the radio level, so that is the tightest possible interworking happens between the two systems. And in release 13, very importantly, we are going to do this ultimate radio level interworking, which is the aggregation of the two radio links. So we're going to do aggregation of LTE and Wi-Fi radio links. And that would be really the ultimate interworking to the lowest possible level, at the radio level. It will be quite smooth. And we are really pushing on this direction as well. And this is.
Well, then that sort of interworking requires some collaboration, actually, between, say, IEEE 802.11 and 3GPP. It's not something you can just do completely on your own, is it?
We do completely on our own because we are planning to do without modification of the Wi-Fi radio link and technology. So we are doing the aggregation at this PDCP layer, so in 3GPP, and we are not planning to modify the Wi-Fi standard or radio links. So we are keeping IEEE informed, but this really has no impact, or at least so far, has shown to have no impact on the Wi-Fi standard. So we are doing it in-house, in 3GPP, and it's really aggregating LTE with Wi-Fi links as is, Wi-Fi technology as is, the latest possible technology. So we don't...
Okay, so that's physical layer interworking with Wi-Fi. It's not, say, actually sharing MAC-level frame aggregates?
Yeah, we do at the PDCP layer, so we do aggregate the two radio links, but again, so that's it's aggregation of the two pipes, but again, at the radio level, that's the key thing. And this is the one option, and the other option we are working on, and for release 13 is the you must have heard, of course, it's LTE over unlicensed. So we are studying the modification to the LTE waveform to operate in a licensed spectrum. So we have established some key priorities. So the first priority is that we are targeting the 5 GHz unlicensed band. The second priority we established from the start is that we are going to work on a global solution that can work across regions with different regulatory regimes. This is very important because there was some unclarity on that, so I would like to make it that clear. We're also working on the so-called license assistant access operation, otherwise called LAA, in which we are doing the aggregation of a primary cell which operates in licensed spectrum to deliver critical information with a secondary cell which operates in a licensed spectrum to opportunistically boost data rates. And the fourth important priorities we established when we started this work is that we are targeting to have fair coexistence between this modified version of LTE and Wi-Fi, as well as between LTE operators using a licensed spectrum. We have defined a qualitative definition of fairness for that, and it basically says, as the objective was, that LAA should not impact Wi-Fi services more than an additional Wi-Fi network on the same carriers. And that was the key priorities we established for the work. The work has progressed quite well. So as of 2 weeks ago, we closed the study add-in phase, this initial evaluation, with the approval of the technical report, which I recommend people interested in it to read carefully. There is also an article we just published on the 3GPP website with all the links. So I think that is also important because there's been some, the working groups have concluded this initial phase, provided some recommendations on the access scheme to use. And based on this recommendation, we have now moved into the normative phase, which is the phase in which we write the specifications. Again, this will still take some time. We need to complete release 13 by March next year. And but the important thing is we are building on the recommendations from the working group from this initial phase, which people can read in the conclusion section of the technical report, which we just approved, and that's it. I don't know if you have specific questions on this topic. Otherwise, then I can just move on.
Well, yeah, actually, I do. There's been a certain amount of controversy. I think some of it is a bit manufactured about what happens to Wi-Fi users when LTE unlicensed and LAA is interoperating with Wi-Fi in a particular time and place. And some claims have been made that LTE licenses more, that LTE unlicensed is more aggressive than Wi-Fi is, that it takes over all the spectrum, that it starves out Wi-Fi users. But I don't see much basis for those claims.
So first of all, again, I'd like to point people to our technical report, which we just approved. It's really, it has a very thorough analysis with a lot of simulation we have done in 3GPP. And as a 3GPP, so far, we have concluded that with appropriate channel access schemes, we can make LTE to work in a very fair manner with the LAA scheme and be a fair neighbor to Wi-Fi and other systems. And again, it's a very thorough analysis. And I must say, this is the most thorough, the more depth I have seen in this subject. I have seen a lot of hand waving, a lot of animosity, and of course I understand it becomes sometimes somehow a religious issue for some parties. And I'll stick to what we have done. We have done a very thorough job so far. Of course, we could always improve. We are welcome for comments. We have had interactions with IEEE on that, technical interactions with a lot of back and forths. And the lessons, sometimes in some cases even changing our assumptions and scenario, others not, and motivating that. And we even took on board their key recommendation to use a specific access schemes. We were evaluating the so-called Category 4 LBT scheme. I don't know if you've been following this this exact study and therefore this nomenclature, but
I'm not that particular study, but I'm aware that the listen before talk is mandated in some countries. The United States is not actually one of them.
Yeah, but because in 3GPP we decided to have a single global solution, so we decided to go for the most restrictive regulatory regime. So therefore, we did decide to implement a listen before talk scheme. But not only that, so we evaluated different listen before talk schemes. In the end, we selected one, the so-called Category 4, because we evaluated many of them in the TR, which people can read. And this, for example, this Category 4 LBT scheme, which has a random backoff with variable contention window, is what also was recommended from the IEEE in one of their exchanges we had with them. We still have to define the details, but again, as we have shown in our technical report, it's and working group have clearly recommended that with the key parameters and for this contention windows and the defer periods that are two parameters of this scheme, it's really we can really enable fair coexistence with the other technologies. And that's, again, based on a thorough technical analysis documented in the technical report with simulation for 20-plus companies. And again, that's I leave it at that.
Yeah. So the technical nub of the notion of the exponential backoff, right? This is the idea that goes back to the early Ethernet that ran on coaxial cable. That when you get a collision, when two packets are on the air at the same time, so that neither one can actively be decoded, the reaction of the transmitter is to increase the delay by some random period of time before retransmitting the packet. So if there is a subsequent collision, then the delay is increased by an exponentially greater number, so that when collisions take place that are a function of congestion, you decrease the sending rate until all the collisions are resolved. So in a very rough way, this is analogous to what Jacobson's algorithm does for TCP.
Yeah.
To conserve bandwidth, to basically handle congestion for the internet in TCP. It's a rough approximation of exponential backoff. that was first implemented in layer two, and then it was copied by Jacobson in layer four to accomplish some similar purposes. And I've heard specific criticisms from people that probably don't understand the details of LTE unlicensed that well, who assert that the LTE unlicensed doesn't do exponential backoff, but you're telling me it does.
First of all, we go step by step. These claims were made at the time when people were afraid of, oh gosh, what is 3GPP going to do? Anyway, so we selected an LBT scheme, the so-called Category 4 LBT scheme, which has this backoff with variable contention windows, which you're just explaining. Now, we are going to do the details of this and the exact configuration of this in the normative phase, and I won't anticipate the exact agreements we're going to have there. But first of all, we got very close to what Wi-Fi has. And let me put it this way. Now I'm going in speculation mode, but we are going to select something that, if it's not exponential backoff, is going to be pretty much equivalent, because that's what all the simulation which have been submitted to in the study phase to prove that Category 4 was the scheme to go, and they were done with an exponential backoff. So it is also likely that we're going to even use the exact exponential backoff. But if we don't, and we just do a small variation of that, it will be, again, a variable contention windows, which increases as the collisions increase. And that is a key thing, which put many parties at ease, I must say. People that are following the technologies and they're not very religious about that. And that's why I triply recommended this specific category LBT scheme. I must say that in the simulations, other companies in 3GPP, they proved that even another scheme with a fixed backoff could coexist with Wi-Fi, but they were in the minority. And by the way, it was also my company, Qualcomm. We proved with our simulation in Qualcomm that the Category 3 LBT scheme, it was also coexisting well. But again, that's, we accepted that the large majority of people, they were going for this variable contention windows backoff, and we accepted that. And this has been selected for the recommendation for the normative phase. Again, we are going to define exact details, but it's going to be either exactly exponential thing or very close or equivalent to that. That's the key thing people have to understand.
Right. And I think it's important to the listeners who may want to understand as well that the reason that shared medium network protocols like classical Ethernet and Wi-Fi and LTE unlicensed do these variable backoffs is because if you have a collision because two stations started to transmit at the same time, if each one waits the same period of time before retrying, the collision will simply occur again and it'll never be resolved. So you just get another collision. After that, you get another collision. And there has to be some variation between the transmitters so you can resolve the collision scenario. And it's not in your interest to do something that is more aggressive than some of these other schemes like Wi-Fi use, because you have to have the same issues. You have to resolve the collision before you can get your LTE unlicensed packet on the air.
I don't know if you covered for you, or if you have more questions on LTE unlicensed, or otherwise I can move on.
I think we can tie a bow on that and say LTE unlicensed is part of. It's actually becoming part of the work that people mark as the 4G standard and will also be part of 5G. The LTE unlicensed offload is, in the general sense, is an important part of the standards that 3GPP is working on and will be working on for the next probably five to 10 years.
Yes, it's let me stress, you're absolutely right. It's a very important part of the work we are doing, the work on LTE analyzer. But also, let me put it in the broader context I was discussing before. Again, what we are trying to solve is this whole business of offloading to unlicensed. And with that, it's not like 3GPP has picked LTE in unlicensed as the winner. We are giving operators two chances. One is the LTE over unlicensed, and one is the LTE to Wi-Fi interworking. And we are trying to develop these two tracks at their best, so with the best possible performances for both tracks. And then it will be up to operators to decide which technology track to use for their offload to unlicense. And different operators, we have seen that they have different ideas already in the 3GPP debate, and we leave it to the operators to decide which way to go. And this has, they have to take into account many considerations when they make that choice. In 3GPP, we will not make their choice for them. We will develop these two things at their best, and that's it. That has to be clear to everybody.
Okay. So there's a certain efficiency in only defining a single standard for when that's practical. And there are some times when you just simply can't know in advance what the right approach is, and the right approach may depend on the scenario. So at the end of the day, I think the customers and the market will decide, is Wi-Fi a better approach for offload than unlicensed spectrum with something like LTE unlicensed? I personally think LTEU is more efficient, and it enables more complete use of the spectrum because there's some math involved in contention protocols that begins to get pretty ugly when the data rates get very high. And LTE unlicensed is a scheduled protocol, so there's actually an analogy. In the world of Wi-Fi standards, there's one mode that's not widely used called scheduled access, but it's something that wireless engineers have understood for at least the last 25 years, I'd say. When you have a number of different parties that are sharing a communications channel at very high speed and over long distances, it's helpful to have a scheduler. But the mere fact that there are different ways to do schedulers, and it doesn't necessarily solve all problems in all times and all places, but we will have that as an option so we can see which one works out better. Excuse me. So the Internet of Things is a big part of 5G. And the thinking behind 5G, and I think one of the desires of the people who are developing standards and products, is going to be handling what's believed to be a fairly significant increase in the number of devices and the amount of bandwidth that the license consumes. So what are you guys going to do to support the Internet of Things?
Yeah, actually, this is a very key topic we are developing for the LTE platform. And actually, in the shorter term, of course, there is also a longer-term goal to address also the Internet of Things with 5G. But even in the short term, there is a huge pressure on 3GPP to deliver on the Internet of Things to address this important market for the cellular industry as well. And we are doing enhancements to the existing LTE platform to address the Internet of Things. And in particular, we are developing this narrowband, 1 megahertz narrowband LTE operation so that operators can multiplex in their broadband operation with this narrowband IoT operation in the same system bandwidth. We are also enhancing the coverage for these specific IoT devices, 15 dB better than the existing LTE, and having a simplified PHY and MAC to reduce cost, and having further power optimization for that. This is one dimension, again, improving the LTE platform to address the Internet of Things. On the other hand, we are also evaluating the possibility to standardize a brand new radio interfaces, which is not LTE, but is a brand new radio interface optimized for the low end of the IoT market. The focus for this would be the really very low data rates, like we're talking about hundreds of bits per second applications, and with very limited mobility, no support for handovers or no support for fallback to any legacy system, no interworking of any sort. Very narrowband operation, 200 kilohertz, so that we also allow smooth refarming of GRAN channels. And like for the enhancements we're doing for LTE, we're targeting very long-range operation, very low cost, and very low power consumption. But again, this will be an important development in 3GPP, also targeting completion in Release 13. Very challenging because it's really a brand new radio which we are evaluating, but we are going to try to deliver that because there are big customers really demanding that as soon as possible. Because as this IoT market is emerging and is growing, so there is more and more demand on 3GPP to produce a spec so that also we can address this market. And these are the two key developments we're doing in 3GPP as of today.
So when you talk about narrowband Internet of Things, the assumption is that the Internet of Things devices are not individually huge consumers of bandwidth. There's basically sending status reports and maybe accepting commands. And say you have a thermostat that measures the temperature and it reports that periodically, but it doesn't have to do that on a millisecond basis. It's maybe on the order of seconds or minutes.
Yeah, but let's clarify. The Internet of Things, actually, it has a variety of use cases. And that's why before, as I said, we are evaluating a dedicated new radio interface optimized for what I called the low end of the IoT market, very low data rates, limited mobility, and this is exactly what you were saying. There were meters, thermostat, I don't know, dog collars, you name it. But are these specific applications, which many people are seeing them as booming on their own, they're creating a big market. So we are even making this effort to have a dedicated air interface for this low end. But we also acknowledge that there is more to that. The Internet of Things is many things. In many cases, you may want to have more real-time, more videos, more things in it than simple few hundreds of bits per second every day or so. So, and in that sense, the enhancements we are making to the LTE platform, they are really important to that as well, because it's true that we are trying to make it the LTE platform more cost-effective, power-effective for the Internet of Things. In some cases, targeting this low-cost, low-data rate application, but the LTE platform, it's also more flexible by design and by definition, and therefore it will allow us to also cater for this not for the low end, but this more broader and rich market for the Internet of Things.
Well, at the high end, where you have, say, a video, you're doing video streaming, you have a surveillance camera, for example, outside your house. You're into a realm that actually has more in common with just the mainline 5G device, which is, you know, a smartphone in terms of the volume of data. So it probably doesn't need any new protocols or tweaking, because there's a kind of convergence there between what the portable devices are going to require and what their surveillance device would require. But there's one variation in that it seems to be there's probably a market for stationary high-capacity wireless connections as the third, fourth, and fifth pipes of broadband into the home. Is there anything special that you have to do in the 3GPP standards to accommodate stationary high-capacity broadband?
No, we are not doing anything special for that, but they will be addressed as well as part of the work we are doing and the platform announcements we are making.
Yeah, because one of the really dramatic things I learned when I went to the symposium in Chicago that was sponsored by Addis, the 5G symposium, as a part of Light Reading's big telecom event, speakers said that the bandwidth target for 5G is up to 10 gigabits per second, which is, you know, that's kind of mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're in the midst of a kind of gigabit networking phase right now, where there's a lot of interest around the country and around the world for much higher capacity broadband links to residences and small offices, hoping to enable some new generation of applications that, frankly, haven't really been defined yet. But it probably has a lot to do with things like telerobotics and conferencing with extremely high resolution of telepresence and that sort of thing.
Yep.
But when we get to the point where it's possible to deliver gigabit speeds over wireless network, it seems to me that just at that point, it's game over for fat broadband at the home. Super big broadband becomes a backhaul technology, and the edge technology, which is already wireless, already has more data. We already do more wireless data over the edge than wired data. So that's pretty much the future of networking. It becomes wireless.
Yeah, and these are the kind of things actually that we are going to start to look at for the 5G, for this, let's say, next generation radio access platform we are going to develop for the so-called 5G project. We're going to start actually from the end of this year. We're going to start by setting our requirements, and this includes some very crazy and very demanding requirements you also mentioned, as well as the more typical requirements we've been dealing with for LTE so far. And we're going to really start to put took down the requirements, the use cases, and the scenarios for the 5G, and then we're going to start evaluate solutions starting from next year's in the 5G. This will be a long-term process, which will take approximately 5 years, four years approx to deliver the specifications. Even though there is some demand to have an early version of the specification in at least from certain regions of the world, targeting really commercial deployments already in 2020 or even slightly earlier than that. That's what we are starting to work on starting from the end of this year. We're going to have an important workshop actually in Phoenix in September, the third week of September, in which we're going to really discuss the vision of 5G and what 3GPP is going to do on that. And you're welcome to join us. It will be a very important initial step where we're going to really try to put down some ideas and start to plan for this important milestone of 3GPP.
Oh, I'll put that on my calendar. It sounds really exciting. So to put the 10 gigabit per second target in perspective, hypothetically 4G LTE could go up to what, about 400 megabits per second?
Yeah, it is more than that, actually. It is, in terms of category, it can already achieve the gigabit per second, yeah.
So how much?
Yeah, the gigabit can pass the gigabit.
Oh, okay. But the ways it does that, of course, kind of reminds me of the 1,000 times goal that the Qualcomm CEO set down a few years ago coming to fruition. And of course, the only way that can happen is by multiple approaches at the same time. We need to have more spectrum, and apparently in 5G, millimeter wave spectrum will become part of the mix. And there's an extremely huge amount of that available for use. We need more carrier aggregation so we can use all the spectrum that's available all the way from the low bands to the middle bands to the millimeter wave bands. And we need to have more efficient coding space division multiplexing. And I think your presentation is one of the techniques that essentially enables you to get more bits per hertz is better coding.
I mean, also network hyperdensification was a key thing to improve the efficiency.
Super small cells.
Yes, super small cells. Also, I mean, when applicable, also broadcast it can come handy if there is a demand for that. So all these things have to be used at the same time. We cannot solve it with one of them. And, of course, new spectrum is also key. There's no way around that because, of course, the growth is so big and the demand for mobile broadband is so big that only by improving the efficiency we can gain so much. So we also need to have new spectrum. Of course, there is the millimeter wave story, which is coming up with 5G, and we're going to start to work in 3GPP from September. But also lower frequencies are very important, especially for the cellular industry, where mobility and ubiquitous coverage has been a key feature which we have been giving customers. That becomes still a prominent feature in the future. So we also need more spectrum on the lower frequencies. We cannot simply forget that. That's very key as well.
It almost seems as if one of the plans, one of the things that 3GPP can do to help make more spectrum available is signaled by the work you're doing with narrowband Internet of Things. So that's effectively a standard within a standard that deals with a particular use case. And when you think about what's going to happen to make more spectrum available, especially in the space below 3 or 4 gigahertz, all that spectrum is assigned to some legacy application. So if you can support the legacy application more efficiently by wrapping it up inside a 3GPP standard, then there's no reason not to transform the spectrum from some sort of purpose-dedicated assignments that it has today into a more general assignment that can be used in the legacy apps as well as the future apps.
Yep. And this also brings to the broader discussion on also sharing mechanisms, which there is a discussion also in US, but also in other countries, on how to share with the, maybe other. There are specific chunks of spectrum which are occupied by some incumbents, but they use it very seldomly, both in time and geography. So also it's important to have these efficient sharing schemes so that in the future we can also more efficiently make use of the available spectrum, which already will help a lot. That's a key thing.
I think there's probably more confusion about the concept of spectrum sharing than probably any other topic in technology these days, because I think some people don't realize that, you know, when you're on Wi-Fi, you're sharing spectrum. I share spectrum with my neighbors. And when we're using cellular service, we're also sharing with other people. We're sharing with all the other customers of the carrier that has the license to the spectrum. So without sharing, these are all shared channel technologies. It's just a question of how the sharing is accomplished. And the answer to that, I think, is typically going to be resolved in terms of considerations of efficiency. Flexibility obviously plays into this as well. I can bring up a new Wi-Fi access point without having to get my neighbors to come over here and help me set up my dynamic channel allocation scheme, which certainly makes it easy. The concept of sharing, though, it's very appealing to people. It's like something we learned in kindergarten is a good thing to do, but it's something kids don't like to do. I like to share your toys, but I don't want to share mine with you. So, yeah, it's a background theme that will always be with us as we try to figure out how to design better radio networks. It's certainly been that way for a long time. So we're coming to the end of our hour here. So I wanted to make sure that before we wrap this up, people have a clear sense of the timeline for 5G, when we can expect to have mobile devices that operate, say, in the hundreds of megabits per second download range in normal operation.
Yeah, so in terms of timelines, we have committed as 3GPP to provide a first, for sure we will provide a first version of the 5G specifications by December 19, and we will submit them to the ITUR process for IMT 2020. So by December 19, we will produce a set of Stage 3 detailed specifications ready for use, and we will submit those to ITUR as our IMT 2020 technology submission, 3GPP technology submission. If you go by the history, so it takes about 1 year plus to see products in the field. So for sure, we will have by December 19 the spec ready and the products 1 year or more after that. Now there is a debate still in the 3GPP, and this also we're gonna address it in the workshop in Phoenix, whether we should have an earlier version of the 5G specs before that, targeting few selected use cases while addressing all the bells and whistles by this December 19 date. And it's a big debate. There's a big push from especially some countries to do so. We're going to have that debate. So and we may produce an earlier version of the specification targeting some selected use cases before that. But for sure we will have a December 19. That is already decided in 3GPP. If whether we have this earlier version of the specification is something there seems to be a big demand for that, but we still have to agree on that in 3GPP. And an important milestone will be this the workshop we are going to have to discuss about this.
So it's probably not going to be too many years before we have the super fast smartphones. I think another thing probably that's going to be coming will be much higher quality voice services. I mean, we sometimes forget that a smartphone is, after all, a phone. And we have, I think, well, you're in Europe, right?
Yep, I'm in Barcelona.
So you're in Barcelona, I'm in Denver, Colorado, and here we are communicating. It's pretty high-quality voice that we're getting here today, too.
Yep.
In Europe, HD voice is pretty common on mobile phones, isn't it?
Yep.
In the U.S., I think we're a little bit behind some of the carriers, Verizon in particular. I think if you're a Verizon customer, you can talk to anyone else who's a Verizon customer with a high-definition call. It's being rolled out by the other carriers as well, and some are still in kind of an experimental phase, doing it market by market. The big win here, I think, is when we can interconnect these calls across the network like you folks can do in Europe. And this, I think, will change our perception of mobile voice quality. In the traditional sense, it's obviously still not as good as hardline telephones, but with high-definition voice, it's going to be even better than hardline telephones. And this is going to be enhanced even further by your 5G work.
Yeah, actually, no, we already did that. Actually, we did a big, big milestone already in Release 12 in this area, where we have standardized this, the so-called Enhanced Voice Services, EVS, we call it, feature. So, and really was a big, big milestone for 3GPP because we really standardized this next generation 3GPP speech coding, which they were designed specifically for packet switch networks and for voice over IP. And VoLTE, it was the key target application for that. Again, the objective there was really to improve the speech quality, user experience, but also at the same time also the capacity. The key feature we introduced was this super wideband speech, which uses a 32 kilohertz sampling rate. Also this source control variable bitrate operation, and also better quality for music and mixed content in these conversational applications. It was also codec with a better error resilience and wide bitrate range for all bandwidths for maximum flexibility. And also interoperable with the good old AMR wideband codec. So we did this. It really was a big project, which took a couple of years or more. But it was an important milestone for 3GPP to get to this super wideband speech codec and higher quality codec for the next generation services, which now we hope they're going to adopt this codec we just finished to standardize in Release 12.
Well, and as that becomes completely ubiquitous, the last use case for the hardline telephone pretty much goes away. The carriers in some countries have already begun to decommission the traditional telephone network.
Yeah, that's what we are hoping for. So, again, it was a major piece of work we have undertaken by 3GPP, and we're really hoping that this will become ubiquitous and will be rolled out in the LTE as well as the 5G networks coming up.
And with 5G, we'll probably just do video calls all the time, won't we?
Yeah, of course.
Probably will. Well, great. I think we've covered everything that we set out to cover today, and there's some very exciting work being done around the 5G standards that comes out in Release 14 and subsequent releases of the 3GPP standards. There's continuing work in 3GPP to support the development of more powerful and more capable smartphones, other kinds of wireless devices, both mobile and stationary. There's some very targeted work on the Internet of Things, some very exciting advanced technical work that's going to, at least exciting to people like me anyway, to aggregate carriers across different frequencies, to open up the millimeter wave spectrum. So there's really practically boundless horizons for innovation within the wireless space. It's pretty amazing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's really fair to say. It's a very exciting moment, actually, and a lot of things happening, and it will be quite exciting moving forward in the next 4 or 5 years. It will be continuing innovation and challenges to address in this space.
And probably one of the key drivers for all of this is that goal that your CEO set down 5 years ago about 1,000 times improvement in wireless data rates. I mean, it looked really bizarre at the time, 1,000 times improvement, but it kind of looks like we're going to achieve it in fairly short order.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dino. This has been really super informative, and we'll put this up on the hightechforum.org website along with all of our other podcasts. It'll be on iTunes as well. And we have a forum section on the website where listeners can comment, ask questions, raise issues. Just for the sake of the listeners, they can go to the hightechforum.org, click on the forums tab, and there you go. So I hope to see you at this event in September.
Yeah, I hope to see you in Phoenix. And thanks, everybody. And thanks to you for hosting me. And it was a very nice conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome.